Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Nun Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 5 lines from the top of Daf Nun Dalid. We find ourselves in the middle of a discussion. We saw the opinion of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, amongst others, regarding the location of the Oron after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. A couple of opinions said it was taken off to Bavel. We saw the opinion of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, as presented by Ula, that the Oron was hidden away in the base of, under the Beis HaMikdash itself. And we saw a reference to this in a pasuk that said that it is there till this day. Vayu shom ad hayom hazeh. So it said ad hayom hazeh, which would mean until this very day, indicating that that is where it is. So that gives rise to the Gemara and its questions. Before we learn the Gemara text itself, we glance at the side. We have our Nosei Mivneh heading, which reads, the Nosei is the topic and Mivneh the structural note. Here we will make reference to our diamond and double underlines that you see coming up. We've written, Haim nitan hasik maskona mi mikro shekosuv bo. Can you arrive at a conclusion from a pasuk that says, number one, ad hayom hazeh, or vayu shom? Shahainu lonetzach. We'll see these expressions, and you'll see that the double underlining highlights these expressions. Do they mean literally until this day, or that they are there? So now we learn the Gemara. Fifth line from the top. The chol hecha dichtiv. Is it really so that wherever it says ad hayom hazeh, which is, was quoted just before at the very end of our last year, it said ad hayom hazeh in the pasuk regarding the Oron. Is that really so? That la'olam hu, that it means forever? Now notice that we have a long question that will take us down into the wide lines of the Gemara. The Hoksiv, do we not have a pasuk that says v'shayvusi yoshev Yerushalayim lo horishu b'nei binyamin? The pasuk describes the Yevusi people. These were a people of the kingdoms that occupied the land of Israel before the conquest in the time of Yeshua. So the Yevusi is the name of one of those peoples, and it says that the Yevusi dwelt in Yerushalayim, and lo horishu b'nei binyamin, they were not overcome, they weren't conquered by the tribe of Binyamin. Vayeshev Yevusi es b'nei binyamin b'Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh. And it says in the pasuk that the Yevusi are dwelling in Yerushalayim until this day. Hachi nami delo golu, is that really so that they were not exiled? V'ha tanya. We have the following source, which indicates that the land of Israel was cleared out of all of its inhabitants during the time of Nebuchadnezzar for a period of 52 years. So that to say that they dwell in Yerushalayim until this very day, that can't be. There was a massive exile. V'atanya, the Taneg source says, Rebbe Omer, Chamishim Ushtayim Shana, for a period of 52 years, Lo Ovar Ish B'Yehuda, no man traversed the region of Yehuda. The region of Yehuda is in Israel. Shenemar Al Hehorim Esau B'Chi V'Onehi Va'al Neois Midbar Kina Kinitzitzu Mibli Ish Over, V'lo shamu kol mikne me'oif ha-shamayim v'ad behema na dedu halachu. Now, without explaining the pasuk in a literal translation fashion, that you can always look up in the Tanakh, but the pasuk is describing utter destruction with no man, no animal life traversing the destruction area, the ruined Beis HaMikdash, the ruined Eretz Yisrael. And it's pointed out that the word behema in this pasuk, the gematria, in the number equivalent, the numerical equivalent of the word behema, equals chamishim ushtayim havu. It represents 52, and in this case 52 years. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Sheva Shonim Niskaimo Gofris for Melech Beretz Yisrael. For a period of 7 years, there was utter destruction, total destruction. Gofris for Melech, Gofris is often translated as sulfur, and Melech is salt. It's what one could only imagine after, heaven forbid, an atomic bomb. What remains after that? The term Gofris for Melech is familiar maybe to many of you from the story of the overturning of Sodom in the time of Avram and Lot. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, my time under Rabbi Yossi. What's the basis of Rabbi Yossi? Asya bris. He comes to his 7 year Gofris for Melech conclusion from a Gezerah Shava using the word bris meaning a covenant. Ksiv Hachab. It says here, V'higbir bris lorabim shavua echad. Shavua is a period of 7 years. And it says that the bris lorabim for 7 years, uksiv hosam va'omru al asher ozvu es bris Hashem elokei avoisam. And it's important to note that this pasuk is a pasuk describing what happens when the Jewish people abandon their covenant with the Almighty, and this is a pasuk in Devarim Chof Tes, pasuk Chof Dalid. In pasuk Chof Beis, reference was made to Gofris v'melech Srefa Kol Arza. So, if you look in the Rashi, who explains the pasuk in Daniel, Rashi we're looking at is in the beginning of the narrow lines, Higbir Lorabim, Besefer Daniel Ksiv. The pasuk is found in the book of Daniel, V'hachim Meforsh L'Rabbi Yochanan. And thusly, Rabbi Yochanan explains that pasuk, Bris HaOmur, Begofris V'melach, that covenant accompanying which is Gofris V'melach, for one who violates the covenant, Shenem Arbo Al Asher Ozvu Es Bris, Higbiru Ha'oyev Al Yisrael, the enemies conquered, overpowered the nation of Israel, Shavua Echad, a period of 7 years. So that the 7 year conquest of the enemies, total destruction, is alluded to in this word comparison, and total destruction being associated with Gofris V'melech, as Rabbi Yossi taught. Well, we've come to the end of the long question, basically to direct the point, is how can you say that Ad Hayom Hazeh means that something continues till this day, when you see another pasuk where Ad Hayom Hazeh appeared with the Yavusi, and the Yavusi certainly were exiled? Omar Lay. So he answers, Hocha, in the case of the Oron, Ksiv Shom. Hosam lo ksiv shom. Because in the case of the Oron, where it says, Vayu shom ad hayom hazeh, and this you can see on the fourth line from the top of this Omid, the word shom means there. It was there till this day. The Oron is there under the Beis HaMikdash till this day. That gives power to the claim that the Oron is under the Beis HaMikdash till this day. This word Shom doesn't appear in the case of the Yavusi. So the Gemara asks, V'chol heichad chtiv Shom lo'ilam hu, and where the word Shom appears, that means that something is permanent. And here again, a question that lasts a number of lines, Meisvei, Umehem min bnei Shimon hochu lahar Seir anoshim chomesh meos uflatya unearya urefoya vuzio bnei Yishi beroisham vayaku esheris hapleto lamolek vayeshvu shom ad hayom hazeh. So you have a pasuk describing the Bnei Shimon defeating in a battle the remnants of an Amalek people, and it says they dwell there till this day. Well, it says here Shom, in which we squiggle underline. Ukvar ola sancheriv melech Ashur ubilbel kol arotzos. But after that, years later, the king of the Assyrian nation, Sancheriv, came, and he was responsible for a great deal of international population transfer. Bilbel Karotzes means he confused all nations, but it simply means his method of international conquest involved population transfer. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, regarding Sancheriv, the Osir Gvulos Amim, Vasu Dosehem, Show Seisi, which means that I removed boundaries of nations and I rearranged populations. So the fact that the word Shom may appear in the Pasuk is not convincing that there's an indication of permanence. Tiufta. So this is a refutation of the claim that because you have either the expression Ad Hayom Hazeh or you have the word Shom, that indicates that something is present till this day. Omar Rav Nachman Tana, we have here another source regarding the presence, the location of the Oron. V'chachomim omrim Oron belishkas dir ho'etzim hoyo gonus. The Chachomim maintained that the Oron was hidden in the wood storage chamber of the Beis HaMikdash. Omar Rav Nachbar Yitzchak, and we've titled this section of Gemara on the side under the Nosei, Deo Nosefes B'mikum Genizas Aron, another opinion regarding the location of the Aron, where it's hidden away, V'hu B'lishkas Giro Eitzim, and it's a reference to that chamber, the wood chamber. So Rav Nachbar Yitzchak says, Af Anan Nami Tanino. We have a Tanaic source, and which begins Maisa B'Koyin Echad. There's an incident with a Koyin, and before we continue with the source, let's take advantage of the note accompanied by the double star in the margin of the Gemara, where we've written the following: Reisha Shel HaMishnah B'Shkolim. The beginning of this Tanaic source is found in Maseches Shkolim, and it says there Yud Gimel Hishtachavos Hoyu B'Mitosh. There were 13 occasions to bow upon entering the Beis HaMikdash. Shel Beis Rav Gamliel Hoyu Mishtachavim Yudalit, and the practice of the Rav Gamliel household was 14 bowings. Ve'echonos Yisera, and where was that additional 14th bowing? Keneged Dir Ho'etzim, opposite the wood chamber. Shekein Masoros Biyodon, they had a tradition. Shesham Ha'oron Nignaz. The Oron was hidden over there, under that chamber. So that chamber represented a location of holiness. That after from the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Oron was stored away underneath that chamber. And Beis Rav Gamliel, being in the second temple period, they had a tradition that is the location, Dir Ha'etzim, and hence they bowed. And now we pick up with that introduction to what's in our text with the Maisa B'Kohen Echad. There was an incident involving a Kohen, Shoy Misasek. He was, Rashi explains this, B'tiyul Uschok. He was behaving we'll call it a fashion of levity, lightheartedness, lacking in seriousness, and what we would call COVID rosh. The raw ritzpa mishuna mechavrosel. He noticed some part of the floor was different than the rest. There was something unusual in one part of the floor. V'volo dias chavero. He went and informed his friend, Hey, take a look at this. He didn't finish saying what he wanted to say, and he died. And it was known without any doubt, Shisham Aroin Gonos, because of those circumstances, people concluded that it must be that the Aron is hidden there, and they must have put the whole story together, realizing that that was the reason for his death, his tiul, the schok, his levity, and lack of proper behavior because of the seriousness of that location. My have Ovid. So the Gemara here asks, what was he doing? Omer Rabbi Chelbo misasek bekardumo hoya. He was fidgeting with his axe. Tono de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, Shnei Kohanim Bali Mumin hoyu maslian be'etzim. There were two blemished Kohanim. A Kohen who is blemished is not fit for serving in the sacrificial activity of the Beis HaMikdash. So there were two of these blemished Kohanim that were maslian be'etzim. Maslian means they were involved with removing worms from the wood, either removing worms or checking the wood to make sure it was worm-free. The rule is that any wood that has worms in it is unfit for the altar. So they were making sure that they were checking the wood for worms. V'nishmato kardumo shel echod mehen, and the axe of one of these kohanim slipped out of his hands. V'naflo sham, and it landed there, and we're talking about the Lishkas Dir HaEtzim, the wood chamber, V'yotza Eish V'ochloso, and a fire emerged and consumed. It says V'ochloso, and it consumed either him or it. It's not 100% clear by looking at the text, but it would certainly be easier to appreciate or understand this as it consumed the axe at the point that it had landed. Rav Yehuda Rami. Rav Yehuda raises a difference. Rami usually is associated with a contradiction. Here there is a reference to a seeming contradiction in Psukim dealing with the poles. There were two poles on either side of the Aron. So one pasuk says, "Vayera'u roshei habadim." The ends of the poles, the tips of the poles, were visible. Uksivlo yera'u hachutza. Another pasuk says, "They were not visible to those standing outside." Ha'ketzad. How do you resolve? One pasuk says they were visible. The other one says not. So the Gemara answers, Nirin v'einirin. They were visible and not 100%. This will be explained as we go on. Tanya nami hochi. The following Tanaic source will shed light on what do you mean when you say nirin v'einirin. The pasuk says vayera'u roshei habadim. Yochol lo yu zozin mimakomon. Is it possible to suggest that the poles that were fixed into the side of the Aron, that they were non-movable, though yuzozin, they couldn't move, they were fixed in a permanent position? Talmud lomar vayarichu habadim. The word vayarichu habadim indicates that the poles could be literally elongated, but it certainly means there was some ability to move the poles. Yochol yu mekaren b'parochas v'yotzen. Would one suggest that the poles which were attached to the Aron would tear through the curtain separating the Aron from the Heichal and enter the Heichal? Tamad lomar v'lo yera'u hachutza. They were not visible to the outside. So ha'ketzad. So how are we to resolve all of this information? In other words, you're saying on the one hand that the poles were visible. You're saying that there was some type of movement or elongation possible in the poles. On the other hand, you're saying they weren't visible to those outside. So, how are we to put this all together? Answer: Dochakin uboltin v'yotzin b'parochas. the poles could be elongated or adjusted to a position where the tip of the poles, there were two poles, and the two tips of the poles were pushing into the curtain, creating a bulge on the other side of the curtain. V'nirin kishnei dode isha, and they would create an impression of two breasts of a woman. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, Tzor hamor dodi li bein shodai yolin. So this Pasuk from Shir HaShirim, which is a sefer that the Chazal referred to as Kodesh HaKadoshim, the sefer Shir HaShirim appears in, on a translation level, as something of a very intimate man-woman relationship with all of the physical connotations that go along with it. But it is a sefer that has no its literal translation meaning is of very little value for us because of its status known as Kodesh Kodoshim, not to be taken in a literal sense whatsoever. But for our purposes here, the book of Shir HaShirim describes the relationship between the Almighty and the Jewish people. And so the analogy here in the Pasuk of Bein Shodai Yolin, Shodai are the breasts of a woman, there will he will dwell. So it's a reference to the, for our purposes, the reference to the impression created of the Oron, which was the concentration of the divine presence in this world, and what impression it gave to those standing on the other side of the Paroches, as we try to describe. Omer Rav Katina. And before we go on, in the Gemara, we glance at the side, they know, say the topic heading, Bebayis Rishon, O Hasheni, in the first temple or the second temple, Hoyu Marim HaKruvim Lo'ile Horogolim. The Keruvim were exposed, were shown to the people who were coming on the thrice year pilgrimage, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, to the Beis HaMikdash. Omar, we continue in the Gemara, Omar Rav Katina, B'shal Shehoi Yisrael Oilin L'Regel, and when the Jewish people came to the Beis HaMikdash on the holidays, Migalin Lohem Es HaParoches, the Paroches would be rolled open, would be drawn open, Umarin Lohem Es HaKruvin, Shehoyu Me'urim Zebozet, and the Kruvim, in English they're referred to as the Cherubs, and as far as Cherubs or Kruvim are concerned, Rashi makes a reference to Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech built. These were two very tall statues that stood on either side of the Holy Ark of the Oron. Truth be told, is on the top of the Holy Ark of the Oron Bris Hashem, there were also Kruvim that were part of the Kaporis, the golden cover of the Oron. But for our purposes, we don't have to be too specific so as to leave room for the Gemara to raise questions here and there. For our purposes, the Kruvim, which were located in the Kodesh Kodashim, were exposed through the drawing open of the curtain, showing the pilgrims, the Olei Regolim, their presence. And how did they look? They were embraced with one another. The Omrim Lohem, and this was, we must say already at the outset, this was something of a miraculous nature, because the statues were made as two separate statues standing independent of one another, and yet when the curtain was drawn open, the public would see these statues as embracing one another. The Omrim Lohem, and the public was told, Ruchi Basim Lefnei Amokom, behold, notice your love in the presence of the Almighty. Kechiba zocher nekeva, like the love between a male and a female, between husband and wife, that are embracing. Mosiv Rav Chisda raises a question. How can you say that the the Kodesh HaGadoshim was exposed, the curtain rolled back, people could see the inside, they could see the Aron. The Pasuk says, V'lo yavo lirois kebales HaKodesh. Pasuk, technically speaking, is in the time of the travels in the Midbar, the Exodus from Mitzrayim, and the Mishkan, which traveled with them, when it was a portable facility. So when it was being taken apart, the Pasuk says that no one shall watch as the vessels are being packed away, being wrapped in their sacks. So from the Pasuk you can see, and we've dashed underlined the key words, V'lo yavo liros, they shall not see. The Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, Rav Yehuda explains, B'shas hachnosos kelim l'nartik shalahem. They weren't allowed to look at the vessels when they were being placed in their cases or their sacks for transportation purposes. So how can you say a moment before, and just compare the dashed underlining that we've done in the last couple of lines, where you see 4 lines ago, Umar l'mes ha-kruvim, the kruvim were shown, and here you have the kruvim, as we said, are part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They're associated with the Aron, so they were exposed, and here you see they weren't allowed to see. Omar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman explains, Moshol l'kalo, the analogy to a bride, calls man shiba v'esavia. During the time period that we refer to as Erus, and this is a time that nowadays we don't see this in practice in a clear fashion, but there was a time that a husband or a man would give a woman something of value, say money or a ring, and he would ma'ares her. In English they use the word betroth her. At that point she is not going to be living together with him as husband and wife, but she is considered an eshesi. She's considered a married woman, but not yet brought into her husband's house. She is an arusa, and it's a period of time when, as the Gemara says, calls manshi bebeis avia. She's still living in her father's house. Tsnua by mibayla. She's still modest, or we can say embarrassed, to be exposed, so to speak, to her husband. So it's that new early stage of relationship, and that is analogous to the Jewish people in the Midbar, when the Jewish people were being formed into a nation, a new nation upon their exodus from Mitzrayim. So the level of closeness and openness wasn't so great. Still the early stage, the embarrassed stage of existence. However, kivan shebosu lebeis chamia, when the wife comes to her father-in-law's house, which is another way of saying she moves in with her husband, einot snua mibayla, she's no longer so embarrassed. Snua literally is translated as modest, but we're not referring to something of an immodest nature, but a woman, once she is fully married with her husband, so she doesn't exercise the same level of restraint as she was prior to that. So in the Beis HaMikdash, where the bond was much closer than it was in the time of the Exodus in the wilderness, so there the exposure could take place. So there's no contradiction. They're simply referring to two different time periods. One, the early time period, there was more restraint, and hence not to be visible, and afterwards exposure was okay. Mosiv Rav Chano Bar Rav Katina. Maisa b'koine echot shoye misasek v'chulei. Well, this source that we had above, where the where as a result of the presence of the Oron, that Kohen was stricken dead, that would seem to contradict this idea of closeness and openness. Omar Lei, so he answers, Nisgar Shekoamris, you're talking about that incident that took place in the Second Temple after there was an exile, after there was a destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Nisgar Shekoamris, Chozru L'chibos HaRishona, when the break in the relationship took place at the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, so there was a break in the level of love, of bonding, so that they were restored to the earlier, more distant type relationship. Hence, the death of the Kohen, and because of his seeming lack of kavod in the presence of the Aron. The Gemara now asks, "B'mai askinon?" We learned before the paroches was rolled open, and they were shown the kruvim. What time period is that? Inemo b'mikdash rishon. If that's a reference to the first Beis HaMikdash, mihavoy paroches. Was there a paroches? There was an amatraxon. There was a wall. A paroches is generally speaking the reference to the curtains that separated the heichal from the kodesh hakodashim. But in the first Beis HaMikdash, there weren't curtains that separated. There was a wall with a small entranceway, relatively speaking, small entranceway between the heichal and the kodesh hakodashim. So the fact that we were taught earlier that the curtains were rolled open would indicate that it's not the first temple period. Elo b'mikdash sheni. So then you'll want to say that it's a reference to the second Beis HaMikdash time period. Well, if that's the case, mihavu kruvim. But there were no kruvim in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Oron and the kruvim were removed from there. So the Gemara answers, and we're using triangles and Roman numerals to show that there are, as under our Mivneh heading on the side, you can see Shnei Deos Be'ezu Bayis Medubar, which Beis HaMikdash are we speaking about? So he says, Le'olam b'mikdash rishon, that which Rav Katina taught us earlier, that they rolled open the paroches, in fact, is the first Beis HaMikdash. My paroches. And what is the reference to paroches? Paroches debavi. It's a curtain that is in a doorway. In other words, in the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a wall with a small entranceway through which one would walk from the Heichal into the Kodesh HaKodashim. In that entranceway, the bavi, the doorway, there were curtains. So that's what was rolled open. And not the large curtains that separated the Heichal from the Kodesh HaKodashim that were present in Bayis Sheni. But rather, there was a wall, and it's the small curtains that were in the doorway. Yom Rabbi Zera Marav, Shloisha Asar Parochos Hoyu B'Mikdash. There were 13 curtains in the Beis HaMikdash. Shiva Keneged Shiva Sha'arim. There were seven that were in the seven gates. Shtayim, Achas L'Pischo Shel Heichal, the Achas L'Pischo Shel Ulam, and there were two more, one at the entranceway of the Heichal, and one at the entranceway of the Ulam, the Beis HaMikdash antechamber. Shtayim b'dvir. There were two in the dvir. The dvir is the wall separating the Heichal from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And in that doorway, there were two curtains that were hung in that, what we call the Amma Traxon, that wall that was an Amma thick. Ushtayim kenegdom b'aliyah. There were two more curtains in the second story, the aliyahs above the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There was another story with a wall, and the same structure appeared, the same construction appeared in that upper chamber. So up till now, we have the first triangle approach said that Rav Katina's dimension of the rolling back of the parochas and the exposure of the Kruvim was in fact in Bayis Rishon. a second approach now. Rav Acho bar Yankiv Omar, and this is our second triangle, Le'olam b'mikdash sheni. In fact, Rav Katina's teaching above about the Ole Regolim and the curtain being rolled open, drawn open to show the Kruvim was in the second Beis HaMikdash. You'll ask, but in the second Beis HaMikdash there were no Kruvim statues. Morris says that is true. Kruvim ditzurta havu kaimi. On the walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim there were Kruvim images that were decorating the walls. Dichtiv v'yas kol kiros habayis mesav kola pituchei miklois. Kruvim v'simoros upiturei tzitzim uksiv v'tzipozov miyushor al hamechuke uksiv kema'ar ish v'lo yois. These are psukim that are from Melachim, which in Perek Vav describes the Beis HaMikdash, and it describes the walls being covered with all kinds of different forms and decorations. And the Gemara asks regarding this last phrase, "My kima'ar ish v'lo yos," Omar Rabo bar Rav Shilo. We continue at the top of Omid Beis, "Ki ish ha'me'ura b'levoya shelo." As a man is embraced with she that accompanies him, namely with his wife. So that the psukim that we just read made reference to the Kruvim, that you can see the second line from the bottom of Omid Aleph. And in that context, we see that there was the images of the Kruvim that were on the walls appear to be embracing one another. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis, Omar Reish Lokish, B'shal Shinichnisu Nochrum Lehechal, when the Gentiles, the destroyers of the Beis HaMikdash came. It's a very sad story here. The Ro'u Kruvim Urim Zebozeh, they beheld these Kruvim images embraced with one another, and these Gentiles hotziun lashuk, they peeled the images off the walls and showed them to all those outside. The omru, and they said in a derisive fashion, Yisrael halalu shebrichosin bracha mikilosin klala. These Jews who are famous for their brachos and famous for their curses, Yasku b'dvorm halalu, they should be involved with these things. This, we'll say, for lack of better expression, with this erotica. Miad hezilum, they cheapened them, they disparaged them. Shinema kol mechabdel hezilua kiro ervasa. Pasuk from Echa, the Book of Lamentations that we read on Tisha B'Av, commemorating the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and all those that used to honor them then cheapen them. Of course, the depth of what these images represents is way beyond the scope of our Gemara markings Daf Yomi Shiurim, but let us simply say that these are preoccupation, we'll say, with images and the love and the embracing and the fondness and all that's being learned here has very, very deep spiritual significance. And we made a brief allusion to this before, having to do with the bond between the Almighty and His beloved Jewish people. And these destroyers, who were themselves pagans having no spiritual capacity whatsoever, and saw things only on the meager, superficial level, did what they did, and over that there is what to mourn. We continue in the Gemara. Ushsiyahoy son nikreis the Mishnah had made reference to a stone that was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the times of the early prophets, the times of Shmuel and David, and the stone was called Shesia, the Evan Shesia. Tona, Shemimena Hushtas Ha'olam. The Brisos elaborates on the Mishnah, the term Shesia, Evan Shesia. It was the stone from which the world was established, was founded, or you can say was formed. So our Mishnah, by referring to that stone as Evan Shesia, is actually taking a stand regarding another question that is introduced by our nosa, our topic heading on the side, Mehechon Nivra Ha'olam, from where was the world created? And we'll see a number of opinions on that, and we continue in the Gemara. Tana, our Mishnah, is Keman de Omar Mitzion Nivra Ha'olam. Our Mishnah reflects the opinion of the Chachomim that appear later in this Tanaic source that claim that the world was created from Zion, from Yerushalayim. Now, once again, as we've said many times in Gemara markings, the Chazal are conveying a point that is most likely of a mystical, hidden nature, and only for those who really study that area of the Torah, sometimes referred to as mysticism or Kabbalah, one gains a full understanding of this. In the context of Gemara markings, we're relying on our disclaimer, as we just said, that there's a much deeper meaning to these things, but we're going to present it in its superficial translation level. But it's so important for us to mention that there is most likely another level of understanding, because in topics like this, how was the world created, from what point was it created, etc., and so forth, so people have a tendency to rely on scientific findings and scientific theories, and if I may add in a very sarcastic fashion, people tend to take theories as fact. Who in the world today can claim they know how the world was created? Was anyone there at the time? Can you prove anything in a laboratory? That, of course, is something of great general debate. But in our role of learning the Daf Gemara, we want to be careful. We make these disclaimers from time to time so as people not becoming fixated on their preconceived notions and deep attachment to scientific theories, and which many people take as fact. So we continue in the Gemara with a superficial presentation of something that's probably much deeper. This source has a number of opinions, as we said, regarding how the world was created. So we continue. Rabbi Lezer Oimer, Oilam Me'emtzi Oso Nifro, the world was created from its center. In other words, there is a core upon which layers and layers were added. Shenemar, Betzekes Ofer Lamutzok Uregovim Yedu Boku. Without a literal translation, but it indicates the word Betzekes is something that's like a clump, like you have word for dough is botsek, a clump. And upon the clump, layers and layers were added, indicating that the construction or the creation of the world took place from a center working outwards. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Olam min hatzdodim nivra. Rashi, min hatzdodim nivra, arba mutzakos hoyu lo, v'nimtach v'holach mikol tzad, ad shenidbak be'emtzi oso. There were four sides, if you will, that were of a solid nature, that were stretched and drawn till the point that they touched one another from within the middle. So Rabbi Yeshua represents an opposite approach to that of Rabbi Eliezer. It's interesting to note that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, throughout the Shas, you'll find different arguments concerning matters of this nature, about matters of creation, where they argue and often take very opposite points of view. That having been said, he says that the world was created from its sides, and as Rashi says, and then the sides were there first, and they were drawn inwards to create a solid unit. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Ki lasheleg yomar hevei oretz v'geshen motor v'geshen mitros uzo. And Rashi points out that the sheleg, which is snow, geshem, rain, they come from the sides. Reb Yitzchok Omar Evan Yorahush Borchu Bayam Mimenu Nishtes Hoilam. The again literal translation, the Kodesh Borchu cast a stone into the sea from which the world was created. Shenemar Alma Adonio Itbau Omi Yora Evan Pinosa. Then in the Pasuk you see Mi Yora Evan Pinosa. Pinosa is a foundation stone or a keystone from which everything is created. V'chachomim omrim, and here we have the opinion we were seeking when bringing in this source. V'chomim say, Mitzion Nivra, from Zion, from Yerushalayim, the world was created. And that's the tie into our sugi here, the Mishnah that said, Evan Shesia, the stone of foundation, the foundation stone, was in the Kodesh HaKodoshim, in the Holy of Holies, part of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Mizmor Leosof, Kael Elokim Hashem, V'yomer Mitzion Michlal Yoifi. And from this Pasuk we learn, Mimenu Muchlal, from it, from Zion, from Yerushalayim, Muchlal Yofio Shalom, the beauty of the world was established. Tanya, Reb Elazar HaGadol Omer, Eile Toldos Hashemai Boretz Behi Borom V'yom Asos Hashem Elikim Eretz V'shamayim. That's a pasuk that is in beginning of Sefer Bereishis, dealing with the creation. And it says in this pasuk, and these are the Toldos of Shamayim V'oretz. Toldos, could say the origins of the heavens and the earth. Toldos Shemayim Mishemayim Nivru'u, Toldos Ha'oretz Me'oretz Nivru'u. The Toldos Shemayim, the descendants, that which is born forth from the heavens, and that's a reference to the heavenly bodies, the stars, the suns. So they were created from the heavens, and Toldos Ha'oretz Me'oretz Nivru'u, and that which emanates from the earth was created from the earth. Again, as we said before many times today, and we apologize for sounding repetitious, these are concepts that are abstract and mystical for our purposes. V'chachomim omru, Eilu ve'elu mitzion nivru. Both the Shomayim and the Oretz, the heavens and the earth, were created from Zion. Shenemar Mizmor Losov, Kel Elokim Hashem Diber Vayikro Eretz Mimizrof Shemesh Ad Mvo, V'Omer Mitzion Michlal Yoifi Elokim Hofia. And we darshan this pasuk, Mimenu Muchlal Yofio Shel Olam, from there, from Zion, the beauty of the world was established. The Mishnah on Nun Gimel Amid Beis mentioned Notal Esadam Mimi Shememores Bo. After the incense offering was performed in the Holy of Holies, the Kohen Gadol exited the Kodesh HaKodoshim and took the blood of the cow offering that had been slaughtered and received, and in the meantime was being stirred, and he then took the blood and sprinkled it. And the Mishnah described the sprinkling as kematzlif. The Gemara asks, my kematzlif, the act of sprinkling in a matzlif fashion, what do you mean by that? Machvi Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda demonstrated, we're continuing at the top of Nun Hamad Aleph, kemenagdino. Menagdino, Rashi explains, is the act of giving lashes to a person who was being punished by that form of punishment known as malchus. A person would be lashed across his back, and the strap would come across a person's back in a descending fashion. In other words, there were 39 lashings. So the first lashing would take place, let's just say, at the upper part of his back. The second lashing, he would move down a bit on the culprit's back, and the third lashing a little further down, in a constantly descending fashion. So that's being used to describe how the Kohen Gadol sprinkled the blood. Tana kishu maza eino maza al hakaporas ela keneged uvyo shel kaporas. The Tanaic source says that when he sprinkled the blood, he didn't sprinkle the blood having it land literally on the golden cover of the holy ark in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but rather he aimed it opposite the thickness of the kaporas. Even though the pasuk says al pnei hakaporas, we're going to see later in the Gemara Mitzvah Shem in our next shiur how the pasuk is not to be taken literally when it says al pnei hakaporas, but it means opposite the covering of the ark. Kshu maze lemalo, when he did a sprinkling, the uppermost sprinkling, mitzadeid yodo lemata, he would dip his finger in blood, and he would hold his hand palm facing down, and flicking his finger upwards, ukshumaze lamato, and when the lower sprinklings would take place, as we mentioned, and we saw this in the Mishnah, when we learned the Mishnah, the Mishnah spoke about achas lamala v'sheva lamato, there was one uppermost sprinkling, and then seven more sprinklings beneath it. So at that point, Shu Maze Lamata, when he did the lower sprinklings, mitzadeid yodo lamala. So he would flip his hand around where the palm of his hand would be facing upwards. The Gemara, in its continuation, deals with the question of how do you know that the sprinkling didn't land on the top of the holy ark literally. But as far as our Daf Yomi presentation is concerned, this is a convenient pausing point. Before we close, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.